Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Down report. Just came coming live from the TV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour we will be discussing this week's go home show to Sunday's big WrestleMania event. 215-8486 if you'd like to talk to us live. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we start off reviewing SmackDown, a couple of items. One is that apparently Rey Mysterio is not medically cleared, at least at this moment, to wrestle in his match at WrestleMania with Samoa Joe for the U.S. belt, meaning, of course, that that match could either be scrapped or they could find a suitable replacement. We're not sure exactly which one that's going to be. I know that certainly there are people who would love to be in a WrestleMania match, and we all know that John Cena is indeed coming to WrestleMania. I think he has other plans, but those plans could change. Secondly, we had an interesting conspiracy theory. I'll call it that. We had an interesting conspiracy theory crop up regarding the Kofi Kingston contract signing. And apparently, there are people out there saying, well, if you look at that contract very carefully, you will see that while the header says WrestleMania, apparently the date is wrong. It says a totally different date. I wouldn't read too much into this, folks. If WWE made a mistake, put in the wrong date, or they used a old contract that was laying around and just put a WrestleMania header on, well, I don't know what the hell happened. I know I went back and I took a look and I can't see any date at all. And I have a 65-inch television and I paused it frame by frame. I can't see a date on the contract. But if one of you did and it's not the right date, then all I can tell you is that it's highly unusual, but it's probably just an oversight and nothing more than an oversight. Now, the conspiracy theory is, well, Kofi's going to win and have to forfeit the belt because it doesn't have the right date on the contract. And I don't think they'd go through all those machinations. I really don't. I'd be very surprised if they did. Next business for people who may not have heard is that the Usos have re-signed with the WWE. 5-year contract, which will effectively take them into late 2021, early 2025. So, most likely will finish up in the WWE. We have no idea yet, of course, what the situation is involving people, but the Revival has, in fact, had a title match added to WrestleMania. A lot of people were screaming, why is the Raw Tag Team Championships defended at WrestleMania? Well, now they are. Apparently, it will be Ryder and Curt Hawkins who come out of nowhere and challenge the Revival. Look, they bite Hawkins as these underdog guys who never win, and Hawkins is the guy who says, I'm slowing everybody down. And maybe if you live in dreamland, then you can say this is where this was heading all the time. A last-minute challenge. Contenders, and they're going to pull it out at WrestleMania. Involved in a tag team title match on SmackDown. So, to be perfectly honest, this is last minute booking. Totally last minute booking, but at least we do have a Raw tag team title defense at WrestleMania now. We spoke of before, of course, John Cena supposedly is verified to be at WrestleMania. So now the question is, who does he take on? Well, he was supposed to take on Lars Sullivan originally. That's the way it was supposed to go. It may still go that way. Maybe this is when Lars Sullivan makes his debut. Then there are those people who say, well, no, it's not going to be that. He'll probably take on Elias. He'll be the guy who interrupts Elias' performance. Very possible. And then there's that third school of thought saying, well, R-Truth constantly mentioned John Cena, John Cena, John Cena, every week when he was doing the U.S. defense. And Rey Mysterio, seriously enough, no pun intended, gets hurt the week before WrestleMania. And now Samoa left without an opponent. That's possible. Excuse me. That's possible, too. But we do know John Cena is, in fact, going to be there. All of those news items adding up, Mike, it's quite an eventful few days before WrestleMania.
It really is. And look, we've talked about Kofi being, if the goal is to get him in around it, but if he's going to be a transitional guy, would it not surprise you if
Billy trouble phone line saying we have that connection? Wow. I don't know what that's all about. We're having a really bad trouble with the phone connection. Let me try you again, Mike. Continue.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. What I was saying earlier was, what we know that Kofi, when he wins, if he wins, is going to be nothing more than a transitional champion, and we know that they want John Cena to hold it a 16th time. So would it not surprise you if he comes out in WrestleMania and usurps that moment?
Yeah, no, look, we only know that John Cena's at WrestleMania. I don't know what the hell he's going to do, and I don't know what the hell he's going to be doing. I mean, I don't know whether he's got the time to do this anymore. You're right. The WWE wants to give him that. Now, my question really is, does John Cena care? That would be the million-dollar question. I mean, at one point, John Cena, before all this Hollywood stuff, and I don't know, maybe at this point he's saying, look, I don't care. Let Rick have it. Not that interested. I can't put in the time. I can't do the defenses. I don't know. We're really going to see on that. As far as the Revival's new match, Todd, Hawkins and Zack Ryder will get their wrestling moment, but to me it sounds like a very sort of thing based upon the fact that fans were buzzing about have no title defense. Well, I guess we lost. Go ahead, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, lately they haven't had really any title defenses on the pay-per-views, on Raw. Like you said, I think you're going to see not new tag team champions right away. Probably sometime down the road you will see new tag team champions if the Revival don't retain.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with Revival. Revival gave the titles primarily because they said they were unhappy. I mean, that's really what it amounts to. I mean, how could they be happy? How many matches have they won since winning the belts? I think they won more matches than having the belts. One after winning the belts. Which is pretty weird. Anyway, we get a show. I'm kind of disappointed that, you know, you brought Kevin Owens back from this injury. And I know you had a big plan for him at WrestleMania and that didn't work out, but the bottom that when he came back ready to go, he'd have been launched directly into a major angle of some kind. But anyway, AJ Styles and Randy Orton do a pretty good job. for the same thing. Randy basically saying you come from the indies and, you know, wrestled in front of 200 people and blah, blah, blah. And AJ Styles really shots fired, saying how many times have you failed the drug test. It got pretty damn personal. Still in all, though, it didn't feel, it was fine, but it didn't feel any better or worse than the first time they encountered each other in the ring. And that's when my interest was at its peak as far as how this match was going to go. Just kind of reiterating what you said, the shock value is now gone. Yes, they upped it with the drug test thing, but other than that, Mike, this was kind of just a repeat of what they said before.
Well, yeah. You know, it was kind of a repeat of what they said before. But I did enjoy it, though. You know, I mean, it's still, and I know we're not supposed to do this, but it's still kind of better than some of the stuff they had on Raw last night. Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, there's no question. There's no question. SmackDown has been the better show leading up to the WrestleMania season for months. For months, with the rare instance where Raw was better, SmackDown has almost always been better. So we get that as the go-home angle for AJ Styles and Randy Orton. And did it make me want to see the fight any more than I wanted to see it last week? Probably not, but it was fine. It was fine. We then get the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, and Aleister Black and Ricochet against The Bar and Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura. This one was weird. Again, you've spent an awful lot of time on Raw building up what I thought was a feud between The Revival and Aleister Black and Ricochet. That's the way it felt. They fought two or three times. The most recent one, Ricochet and Aleister Black were counted out thanks to some sneaky doings by The Revival. And I really thought, well, okay, this is going to lead to a match at WrestleMania. This is going to be how this goes. And this is what I warned people when I said Aleister Black and Ricochet float back and forth, is you're wasting time. This is the WrestleMania season. You're wasting time on a possible buildup wherever they go. You're wasting the other person's time. In this case, it was the Revival's time. You're wasting the Revival's time, locking them in a feud with a tag team they aren't even going to fight at WrestleMania. Easily given a week or two to Hawkins and Ryder to help this out. And forget Aleister Black and Ricochet. Let them stay on SmackDown and build that up. But no, because again, this is last minute. So it's a decent enough match. Anytime I see Rusev and Nakamura in the ring, especially now with WrestleMania season so close, literally days away, I say to myself, wow, how far have they fallen? Look at what Shinsuke Nakamura last year. Huge WrestleMania match. Nothing this year. I mean, yeah, he's going to be in the tag team thing, but please, comparatively, what does he have? The chances of Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura walking out of that four-man tag team championship match as champions are about the same as Braun Strowman and the 10-year-old kid being a last-minute entry. They're not winning it. So they're in there for no other reason than... See, WrestleMania should never feel this way, too. It should never feel like, well, we're changing a whole bunch of matches just to get as many names in as we possibly can so people can't say they weren't in WrestleMania. We'll put two big battle royals up so everybody gets used. There'll be tag team matches where there's four teams in there, so literally eight men get used, or women, as the case may be this year. You've done this twice now. You have a four-team women's tag team title match, a four-team men's tag team title match. Two battle royals. And it feels forced. It absolutely feels forced. Now, the Usos just signing their 5-year deal. How do I feel about that? Well, I'll tell you, once the ink is dry on the paper, I wouldn't be surprised if the WWE takes the tag team title belts off them. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Why keep it, right? Oh, well, you're signed, you're sealed, you're ours for 5 years, back to treating you like garbage. Could happen. Or they could say, here's a little bit of a reward for signing that contract, and you're keeping the belts. I would hope the latter. We'll talk about that more on Sunday. But this fight felt like nothing but an advertisement. I felt like I was watching a commercial for WrestleMania, Mike, rather than a wrestling match.
Right, and that's the thing. You don't want matches to feel like they're basically, you could have put this, we have talked about how they tend to advertise a pay-per-view while the pay-per-view is on the air, right?
Yep.
This felt like that. Exactly that. And you don't want that. And furthermore, again, how does this affect, now that they've signed, here's another question we can answer on Sunday. How does this affect Naomi?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I guess Naomi's going to have to sign her own contract when the time comes, if that's what she wants to do. But now that the Usos have signed, there's no incentive to treat her better because they can't go anywhere, even if she does. So I don't know whether they'll treat her better or they'll treat her worse. It's really weird. The WWE is really weird when it comes to this, and you can't really figure it out. Okay, we get the match at WrestleMania. Is it interesting? It's only interesting as far as Aleister Black and Ricochet, because ultimately that's where this is leading. So would I rather have seen the Usos versus Aleister Black and Ricochet by themselves? You bet I would. You bet I would. Not because I don't like Rusev, not because I don't like Shinsuke Nakamura or Sheamus and Cesaro. I really, really like all four of them. Very much. However, we know why they're in there, don't we? One of them is in there to take the pinfall so Aleister Black and Ricochet don't have to. Or the Usos don't have to. And that'll lead eventually to probably what will be a team-on-team match with Aleister Black and Ricochet against the Usos down the road. Not that excited for this. So I think it's off to a little bit of a slow start. Now, the thing is, Alexa Bliss just appears afterwards and makes a match. Now, I don't know. Is she the host of WrestleMania or the booker? Because I'm confused. So far, she's booked two matches that I know of. She's allowed the two chuckleheads into the Battle Royal. And she's now said that it's going to be a four-team match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. So, I don't know. Next, we get The Miz, who cuts another really good promo before his match with Sanity. Now, I have all kinds of problems with this. I was talking to some people off the air about this. Yes, Sanity's a throwaway team. We get it. The Miz has to look strong going into WrestleMania, especially in a Falls Count Anywhere match. I get it. But you have now completely and 100% thrown Sanity away. 100%. There is no credibility left in them whatsoever, and here's why. Never one time have I ever heard anybody say, you know what The Miz's forte is? Falls Count Anywhere. Because he's such a wild brawler and such a tough, hardcore guy that it's really tough to beat The Miz in a Falls Count Anywhere match. I've never heard anyone say that. Sanity, on the other hand, has made a short career out of being these wild, brawling, out of control, likes to take it out of the ring, no rules type guys. And you're going to tell me that The Miz, by himself, beats all three of them. All three of them. Well, if they can't beat one guy, in a match that is 100% tailor-made to their exact specifications, then you're never going to be able to promote them as a team that can beat a team. How? They can't beat one guy. And before people say, oh, it doesn't mean anything, here's what I want you to do. Replace Sanity in this equation with Aleister Black and Ricochet. How about if Shane McMahon said Aleister Black and Ricochet are going to fight you and The Miz beats them both? Would you be happy today? Or would you be screaming, my God, you've ruined them. You've totally ruined them. How could you possibly do this? Sanity's no different. Sanity was headlining NXT pay-per-views. Sanity was huge. They came over here and 100% were just absolutely from Jump Street demolished. Which begs the question, why in the hell did you call them up to begin with? You called them up because you needed a jabron tag team? When you could have hired a million and one of them and you already have six. It doesn't make any sense. Now, there was a dressing room full of people who could have fought The Miz in a no-holds-barred match. Literally a dressing room full of people who would have loved to have been on SmackDown. How come it has to be Sanity? I mean, that's rubbing salt directly into the wound, Todd. That's basically telling Sanity right to their face, we got nothing for you and we never are going to have.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Right there, like you said, whoever's writing them, you know, like for their stuff, should be fired. They should find something for them to do, not let them sit around and do nothing all day. And it's sad and pathetic right there.
I wish they were letting them sit around and do nothing, because doing nothing is better than being single-handedly beaten by The Miz in a match that should be tailor-made for your team, Mike.
It really is. And look, here's what's odd about this. Look at what they're doing with Sanity, but look at what TNA, what Impact is doing with their former teammate. You know, totally different things, you know.
My question, I guess, is why did they call them up, Mike? Why even call Sanity up if you have nothing for them?
Right. I mean, look, they didn't do that. Remember that match on SmackDown between and I know it was a joke against Arn Anderson, but with Carmella and this lady they called CJ Lundy.
Yes.
She was never in the company. They brought her in just for that specific reason. They couldn't have did that with three local talent guys.
Mike, of course they could have, and that's why I said they're just rubbing Sanity's nose in it now. They're literally just saying, guess what you get to do tonight? All three of you get to go out and lose to The Miz. Now, initially when the match started and each one had to tag in, I was like, okay, The Miz is going to outsmart them. He's going to get beaten to death, but he's going to get a little roll up here somewhere, a little quick, cheap victory, and run out of the ring. And that would have been okay. Would have been bad for Sanity, but still okay. But when you say it's a false count anywhere and it's an absolute brawl and the team that you're fighting is hell-bent for that, that's exactly what they're made for. Still win. Wow. And everybody knows I'm a huge Miz fan. And of course you have to have the Miz looking strong going into WrestleMania, but not that strong. So let me get this straight. He beats all three of Sanity by himself, but Shane McMahon is going to be a real test for him. So Shane McMahon then thinks, or the bookers at least, think that Shane McMahon is a tougher opponent than all three members of Sanity. And you know that's how they feel, because you never put the stronger team, you never put the stronger person first. In other words, you don't say, well, Seth Rollins is going to fight Brock Lesnar on Raw, but then he's going to have to fight fill in the blank, Baron Corbin. Well, he beat Brock Lesnar, but can he beat Baron Corbin? Well, of course he can if he beats Brock Lesnar. Well, then what did you just do? He beat all three of Sanity. If you beat all three of Sanity, I'm pretty sure he could beat Shane McMahon. Suddenly, Shane McMahon is tougher than all three members of Sanity combined. That's unbelievable. All right, so let me see if I can get this straight. This is a tough one. We now get a 16-person intergender match. And it's the Hardy Boys, Heavy Machinery, R-Truth, Naomi, Asuka, Nikki Cross, and Carmella versus Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, Andrade Cien Almas, Selena Vega, EC3, Shelton Benjamin, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, and Lana. And it just ends in a no contest. It's just a cluster, for lack of a better word. First, it's some kind of a weird tag team match, and then it turns into a battle royal, and I have no idea what the hell Otis was doing when he got in the ring and literally screamed, "I'm coming," at Mandy Rose. It was funny, but it's really weird. And then, of course, you got Lacey Evans walking down to the ring, which I'm so tired of this. And everybody I know is so tired of this. It's just one more example of the WWE literally throwing things together at the last minute, saying, I don't know. Get everybody out there you can. Show them what the Battle Royal is going to look like. Instead of working for weeks on individual feuds that could potentially take place during that Battle Royal, instead of saying, well, I'll see you at the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. I'm purposely going to make sure that even if I don't win, you're not winning. I'm throwing you out. Or oh my God, these two people are going to get at each other at the Andre the Giant Memorial, well, the Mae Young Class, or whatever you want to call it. At the Battle Royal, you could have set up individual feuds. Even across the aisle, SmackDown and Raw. You could add a SmackDown guy, call out a Raw guy, a Raw guy, call out a SmackDown guy, a Raw female, call out a SmackDown female, whatever it happens to be. But over the course of a month or 2 months that you knew you were having this Battle Royal, you could have worked on individual feuds where people say, oh, this is going to be interesting. I want to see how so-and-so reacts to so-and-so. I want to see how this interaction goes. I want to see when these two clash. Instead, it's now just put everybody in the ring at once. They don't matter. They're all jabrones. It doesn't matter. That's the WWE's philosophy. It doesn't matter. They gave Colin Jost and the other yucklehead plenty of airtime, didn't they? But they didn't give hardly any airtime to flesh out any possible bad blood between other members of that Battle Royal. And for that reason, then we get stuck watching something like this 18-person fiasco, Mike.
Right, and really, the two people that shouldn't have been, that didn't, is Lana, and first off, Lana's on the wrong side. If she, and we don't know what Lana is right now, but the people respond to her, the fans respond to her as a face, so she doesn't belong with those girls, and Nikki Cross doesn't belong simply because it doesn't fit. She's this crazy girl that, and I know you want to get her in there, but she's this crazy girl that's all by herself. She doesn't fit in this with these people. She has no feud with nobody in that ring, and she doesn't fit. So, I mean, look, I get Carmella, I get Selena Vega. I mean, if you were gonna put Lana. If you were going to put Lana on a team, she should have been on the other team going against Selena Vega, you know?
So this is what I mean. Mike, it was so thrown together. And again, okay, maybe we get a little bit of Carmella and Selena Vega, but why didn't they spend some time building up potential feuds between males and females in their respective battle royals so that we would have interesting dynamics between several different superstars rather than just basically say, no, this is all about two Saturday Night Live guys and Strowman.
If I could answer it, I'd answer it. You know?
I know. That's the answer.
Yeah. We talk about making a show interesting, but the problem is if you can't answer the questions on a show like this, the show becomes uninteresting. You know, I mean,
that's the problem. I mean, what are you going to do? You mean to tell me you couldn't have said, look, Andretti Cien Almas and someone else is going to have words and they're going to meet in the battle royal. And this particular female and this particular female are going to have words and they're going to meet at the battle royal. And maybe Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville finally do come to a heated argument where they say, well, you know what? We'll settle this at the Battle Royal because I'm going to be the winner. I'm tired of being the one watching your back or whatever. And then at least we got several different storylines going into these Battle Royals that we say we have to watch for that. So even if they don't win, it's not about whether Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose wins. It's not about whether Carmella or Zelina Vega win. It's not about whether Andretti Cien Almas or whoever he's bickering with wins. It's about what happens to them during the course of the Battle Royal. It's the storylines that develop as a result of the Battle Royal. In other words, you use the Battle Royals at WrestleMania to begin feuds for after WrestleMania. You sow the seeds. No, they're not doing it. They don't care. They don't care. I have a lot more to say about this WrestleMania on Sunday, but it's a very haphazard one. Let's just say that. This has been a very haphazard WrestleMania. So before we get to the Samoa Joe Ali thing, I mean, almost everybody's cut a promo. Everybody's getting promos left and right. And the bottom line of the situation is, so, you know, Becky Lynch is, it is what it is. This has been so convoluted and has taken so many twists and turns, and unnecessary ones, by the way. You want to talk about overbooking something. If there's ever been anything that has been totally and completely overbooked, it is this three-woman main event for WrestleMania. It has taken so many twists and turns and overbooking that now, I'm glad WrestleMania Sunday, because this couldn't survive another week or two before people just say, I don't care anymore. That's where it's gotten to. See, it should reach its peak just about the time WrestleMania comes around. But what they're doing is they rush it, or they do the exact opposite. They take so many twists and turns along the way that either A, it's nowhere near its peak, or B, it's so far past its peak. Poor writing. A good writer builds up his chapters so that at the conclusion, it's reaching its peak dramatically. The WWE will either reach their peak dramatically 3 weeks before the event and then stumble into it for three more weeks of nonsense that makes you just go, oh, whatever. Or they'll just start it a week before the event and you'll have no time to get emotionally invested in it. They never seem to be able to pace it correctly. Now, Becky Lynch did nothing wrong. The promo's the promo, whatever. All I know is it's a very confusing thing where you're sitting there saying, well, Becky Lynch could technically walk out with both belts, not even pinning the other champion. How does it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Some unnecessary plot twists. We then get, of course, Samoa Joe and Ali. He's not Mustafa Ali anymore. He's just Ali. And I do, if I feel sorry for anybody this WrestleMania season, I feel sorry for Ali because this was his spot. Kofi Kingston's spot was Ali's spot. And Kofi Kingston knows it. I don't know if you saw the thing that they did where they Kofi Kingston kind of acknowledged it and said, look, you know, your time is coming though. You're great. And, you know, I understand that I rode some of your momentum and it's a nice moment. Ali understands, but man, he's got to be questioning, is my moment really going to come when instead of being one of the feature matches at WrestleMania, you're basically passing out to Samoa Joe? Now, Samoa Joe was not given this match on SmackDown with the full knowledge that Rey Mysterio probably wasn't competing. and made to look strong so Samoa Joe can sit on the sidelines for WrestleMania. Samoa Joe is not going to sit on the sidelines for WrestleMania. If he really was going to, they would have scrapped this match and said, Joe, there's no point in going out there and taking up TV time, making you look good. We're not having a U.S. title match at WrestleMania. We're just going to use that TV time to build something else. That's what they would have done. They would have called an audible and said, there's no need. So Joe's having his match. I don't know who's going to take him on, but Joe's going to have a match. If it's not Ray, which it increasingly looks like it's not going to be, then it's certainly going to be someone. Otherwise, there's no point in having Joe come out there at all. So, Mike, I don't know where it's leading, but you don't build up a guy who's not going to have a match at WrestleMania with a match like that.
Right, and think about this. I know he's a Raw guy, and I know we've said this before that they're not planning on Baron Corbin being the guy for Kurt Angle. I mean, could it be that the guy for Kurt Angle, the last match for Kurt Angle, might be U.S. title, him trying to win the U.S. title? Now, that would be a moment. That'd be them giving a guy a title on the way out, obviously. But I mean, I'm just speculating here. I'm just talking about, you know, what we said before about the Baron Corbin situation. That's not, you know, the match, but again.
I mean, it's hard to say, Mike, and I'll tell you why. He's already beaten Samoa Joe. So I don't know if they'd want to rehash that match again. And then if he's going to fight anybody that's not Baron Corbin, I think it's going to be John Cena. Or something tells me at this stage of the game, it's going to be Baron Corbin. Because I don't know how you could cancel it. There's no more show. There's nothing to cancel it on. You'd have to cancel it on the pre-show of WrestleMania for some ungodly reason, which I wouldn't know what the reason would be. So I think they're going to go through with this. Otherwise, Corbin has nothing at WrestleMania. So I think they're going to go through with it. And that's why I thought the John Cena waiting in the wings thing, I said, that could be. But now I don't, because they had their chance. They had their chance to have Corbin out of this match on Monday night, and they didn't do it. So we'll see where that goes. Anyway, Mustafa Ali passes out. It was an okay match, Todd, but again, you don't give a guy a match before on your go-home show to WrestleMania to make him look strong for a match he's not going to have.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember back in the old days, they didn't do it that way, actually. And now they're just like, oh, we're going to make you strong, but you're not going to be part of WrestleMania or anything like that.
Well, I think that's why we know he is going to be part of it. There's no way Samoa Joe's not defending that title, because if he really wasn't, let's just say, for the sake of argument, they got blindsided and Rey Mysterio really got hurt. And they said, hey, Joe, we don't have a match for you. And a last-minute opponent really doesn't make sense. We can't really get one together, so you're just going to sit out WrestleMania. You can be in the Battle Royal or whatever if that's what you want to do. He wouldn't have had that airtime. They would have said, there's no point in you having this match with Ali. We'll save it. So I know he's going to defend the belt against someone. So let's get to the Kofi Kingston contract signing, because unlike some other people, I don't think this went well. Now, Daniel Bryan's went magnificently. One of the best performances by Daniel Bryan I have ever seen him do, to his credit. He was very believable. He felt 100% like he meant everything he was saying. What he was saying made some sense. Not all of it. In his twisted way, it makes sense. When he said, look, these fans are chanting Kofi like they chanted yes for me. I know how that feels. And it makes you feel like you can do anything, and it makes you feel like you can climb mountains, and it's great, but it's a fad. And at the end of the day, that's not enough. And they'll turn on you in a heartbeat. And a lot of this was very well written. It was so well written that I'm actually thinking to myself, I don't know if Daniel Bryan actually wrote this or someone who is a little bit better wrote this, but I think the underlying, maybe it's a blind squirrel finding a nut. Maybe I'm reading too much into this. But when Daniel Bryan was saying his piece, all I kept saying was, Daniel Bryan is coming across as a guy who is bitter. He came back from his injury. The fans showered him with adulation, but he couldn't get it done. And when he realized, I can't get it done, I'm not as good as I used to be, rather than to blame himself and say, look, the injury took a lot out of me, I'm not the same guy, I'm just going to have to, you know, settle for what I can do, he became bitter toward the fans. You want too much of me. You expect too much of me. If I don't deliver everything, you're all over me. And he took the shortcut. And now he sees Kofi Kingston getting that same reaction. And he says, that's what's going to happen to you, because he can't deal with the fact that maybe it just happened to him. So that's I thought he did a brilliant job. I have no problem with how Daniel Bryan handled this. I have a problem with Kofi, because this is Kofi's big spot. And Kofi's never been one to have nothing to say on a microphone. And Kofi, anybody who's ever had a microphone in their hand knows Kofi froze. When Kofi first started and he said, all right, I've been sitting here listening to you tell everybody how to live and you tell everybody whatever. Now it's time for you to shut up and listen. I said, okay, this is off to a good start. And I thought he was going to rip him a new one and say, look, you're so caught up with trying to tell everybody else how to live that you don't even realize you're living all screwed up. You come back here from your injury, and because you couldn't be the man you thought you could be, you've turned on all these fans because you think in some twisted way your injury is their fault. It's your fault, Daniel Bryan. You've had all the opportunities in the world. I've had none. And this is the one I'm going to capitalize on. And you know it, and I know it. That's what I thought he was going to say. Instead, he just kind of said, when you got here, I was watching you, and I watched you, not as an observer, but Daniel Bryan, I was watching, and he was just froze. He froze. You could see he froze. And then the crowd bailed him out by chanting, Kofi, Kofi, and he took that couple of seconds or 30 seconds to try to regroup, because he was totally lost in what he wanted to say. Then he kind of made a little bit of a comeback and said, look, one thing we do have in common is you know how this feels and you know where it leads. You know when the momentum of the people like this is behind, you know what happens. And what happens is I win at WrestleMania. That moment was okay. But, man, Kofi Kingston had the spotlight directly on him. This was his big, shining moment. If he had delivered a scathing rebuttal to Daniel Bryan that made people go, oh, shit, Kofi Kingston would have underlined and cemented himself as a top performer. Instead, what he did was he reminded people why he wasn't. Because all by himself, when the light is on him and he has to take that microphone and sell that fight without putting on a sad face because Vince McMahon's picking on him and you're using Vince McMahon's mic skills, or Daniel Bryan's picking on him and you're using Daniel Bryan's mic skills, or the whole New Day is back and forth, and you're feeding off each other's mic skills, you had to use totally your own. With no help from anybody, just here it is. And he didn't come through. It's just as simple as that. He didn't. So that was the first thing I noticed, Mike, is that Kofi froze when the moment came for him to do his big rebuttal.
Right. And my thing is, I'm surprised that we've watched Daniel Bryan do this the last several weeks with the whole fickle thing. Fickle, 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 fickle. I'm surprised he didn't try and throw that back in Daniel Bryan's face. You're telling me that they're going to turn on me. Well, who's being fickle now? You know, just because they turned on you, you think they're going to turn on me?
And they never really turned on Daniel Bryan anyway. I mean, all he had to say, Mike, was you became bitter because you couldn't live up to the fans' expectations. You're not like me. You became bitter because the fans expected the best out of you, and you no longer had it. I have not even shown the fans my best yet. That's nothing the same, Daniel. The only thing that is the same is you know how this feels when they get behind you. That's all he had to say. But I thought he was really going to rip into him and say, suddenly you know better than the rest of the world how to live. You know how to drive. You know what to eat. You know what to wear. You have to have a special belt. You have to, everybody's a B-plus player compared to you, and you have to have this guy alongside at ringside to win your matches because you can't deal with the fact that you're not the man you used to be. And when you figured it out that you're not the man you used to be, you decided it must be the fans' fault instead of your fault. You decided I'll get that belt any way I have to prove I am still that man. But you're not, Daniel. You're not still that man. You're a third of that man. And to tell you the truth, I could have beaten you when you were that man. And now you're just about two-thirds that man. That would have been better. Now, to Daniel Bryan's credit, Daniel Bryan's facial expressions tried to sell everything Kofi was saying, even though he wasn't saying much other than, I watched you. It was bad. Kofi blew it. But Daniel was trying as hard as he can to sell and put Kofi over in it, and he did an okay job of it. So to the casual observer, it might not have looked so bad. But it was not good. It wasn't pretty. And I guarantee you that the people, the powers that be, were watching Kofi very carefully, saying, how can he handle this? Can he take that microphone and really just bam? And he didn't. And that's a shame. Still in all, it was an okay segment. It was saved by Daniel Bryan. And let's get on to this little conspiracy theory thing, because I've had a couple of fans write me and mention this. And I don't know whether they're kidding me or I don't know whether they're on the same narcotics that apparently are floating around Randy Orton's gym. But I didn't see a date on any contract. And I slowed it down and I looked. Kofi Kingston only had the contract in his hand for a second. And then he flipped it back. Daniel Bryan only had the contract in his hand for a couple of seconds. I never saw a close-up of it. But at least two fans have written me, three actually, and said, contract, it does not have the right date. It doesn't have WrestleMania's date. And they feel that Kofi's going to win, and then Daniel Bryan's going to say, I looked over this contract, and it's got the wrong date. Therefore, the contract's null and void. And that's how Kofi will win at WrestleMania, have his big moment, and then Tuesday get stripped of the belt. I think we're reading way too much into this. Number one, I didn't see it. And I don't know how you saw it, because I looked very carefully, and I saw no... I could not read anything off that. And again, I have a very large television. I could not read a thing off that contract other than I saw the WrestleMania header. Number two, if they did make that mistake and put the wrong date, probably not intentional. It's probably just, well, they let something slip. They didn't figure the camera would ever pick it up. Why does it matter? They don't care. But I don't think this would be a storyline. Because if it is, it's a storyline nobody gets. We'll be like, well, wait a minute. We weren't let in on that. We didn't get a chance to see that. I think if that was going to be the storyline, they would have had the camera focus in on it for a moment. So like a lot of fans could have said, whoa, wait a minute. That's not the right date. Or we could go back and rewind it and say, oh, yeah, look at that. We didn't pick that up. But me having to go frame by frame by frame by frame by frame to even come close to seeing the WrestleMania header is not exactly giving you a hint storyline. So, Mike, I think that's a bit of a conspiracy theory.
I think so, too. And, I mean, not that the WWE has ever did this type of thing before. I had people say, well, it's a conspiracy theory, but just take a look at this stuff, but not in this situation, you know, not in this situation. And that's the thing. I went on YouTube and looked at the contract and looked at that particular segment, and I couldn't tell either. And I looked at it live, and then I went back and looked at it on YouTube, and I couldn't tell.
Yeah, me neither, and I don't know how anybody can. If you did and you're right, I mean, congratulations. You're watching this thing with a laser eye, that's for sure, but I still don't think it's going to lead to anything. I still don't think it's anything but an unintentional mistake if it's there. Probably just totally unintentional, and they never figured anybody in the world would pick it up, so they didn't bother reprinting it or whatever. What does it really matter? I mean, they could do that. If that's what they're going to do, then they could have put a stipulation that we don't even know. And Daniel Bryan could have said, well, the stipulation was if Kofi wins at WrestleMania, it's got to be under 5 minutes or I still retain the belt. Well, they could do that with anything. So why would they do it with the wrong date? What would the date have to do with it? It's WrestleMania. It says WrestleMania on the contract. There's not another WrestleMania. So I don't think so. I really don't. So how was this show? Well, for a go-home show, it felt like a patchwork quilt. It felt like, let's just throw everybody out there and see what we can do. Did it make me want to see any of the matches more than I did before I watched SmackDown this week? No. Because, the Kofi Kingston one peaked last week. Last week I was at, okay, I wish WrestleMania was Sunday. Last Sunday. That was when it was at its peak. As far as this tag team thing, this just kind of began. So I'm not invested in this in any way. None of these teams, you know, got a chance to flesh anything out. It would have been a lot more fun if maybe you were going to build this up, and for whatever reason, Rusev and Nakamura got into it with the bar a couple weeks ahead of time. So they're all involved. And maybe you should have kept Aleister Black and Ricochet on SmackDown to get in the Usos' faces more instead of worrying about what the Revival was doing, and we could have had that built up. So that didn't even come close to peaking. The Miz thing jumped the shark. Again, now you've reached its peak and you went past it. Last week was the peak for The Miz. I wish WrestleMania was that Sunday following last week, because then that would have reached the peak for The Miz. Now the peak is heading for the valley. He's beat up all three members of Sanity. Why in the world could he not beat Shane McMahon? Peak athletes. And he can't beat a 50-some-odd-year-old father? Come on. It's ridiculous. AJ Styles and Randy Orton was just kind of more of the same thing. So it was no more fuel to the fire. It was just keeping the fire burning. That reached its peak last week. Once again, WrestleMania almost felt the SmackDown go-home show kind of felt last week. And this felt like, well, we're idling. We're still trying to keep the motor running, but we're not revving it any. And that's what it felt like to me. So, Todd, what's your overall thoughts of the show, and what's your grade?
It was a pretty good show, and like you said, but I just didn't like how it ended with the contract, whatever. It felt like it was like post WrestleMania this past week. So I'm gonna give it like a kind of.
He's still giving it an A. He's still giving it an A. Even though he didn't like the contract signing and things, given it an A, I'm not coming close to that. An A show would have given me a really scathing Kofi Kingston rebuttal to Daniel Bryan that would have left us all going, oh. A really scathing rebuttal would have really helped that feud. An A show would have given us AJ Styles and Randy Orton really getting down in the dirt. They tried a little bit, but again, didn't add too much. It just kept it warm, you know, kept it on the burner. An A show would have given us a reason to say all four of these men should be in, you know, this match. all four of these men definitely deserve to be in this tag team title match. It didn't do that. You already blew your load on Raw with Ronda Rousey and Charlotte and Becky Lynch, but you could have done something more than you did on SmackDown with that. And as far as the Battle Royal is concerned, you did. I mean, it's ridiculous. Just what happened was ridiculous. So, as a go home show, and especially as a go home show for WrestleMania, I think this failed on most accounts. I'm giving it a D. Mike, what's your thoughts?
You know, I know we're not supposed to do this, but comparing this show to Raw, I gave Raw a D. I'm going to go ahead and give this a full two and a half letter grades higher and give it a C.
Okay. So we're kind of, it's interesting. You got a C, and a D. I'm hard on it because I saw so much potential. So much potential. And it fizzled. Did we really need to see Samoa Joe tap out or pass out Ali without any indication of what's happening with Ray? I don't know. We should have had more to that. The Kevin Owens show just ended up being keeping the meal hot on the burner. I just think there was so much more they could have done. Again, as far as Aleister Black and Ricochet, I don't even know why you wasted all the time with the Revival if you're just going to bring them over here. Shane McMahon and The Miz thing became absurd because if The Miz has the toughness to beat all three members of Sanity in a brawl, in an outside-the-ring brawl, then if you're Shane McMahon, you should probably say, I'll just send a letter of apology to your dad because obviously I can't beat you. But it's interesting how we all saw it a little bit different. Todd liked it quite a bit. I mean, you could only give it an A. He gave it an A, not even an A minus. So he's one half grade away from a perfect show. Mike saw it as a middling, and I saw it as under middle ground because I do feel that the WWE had the potential to make it a B, at least a B show, and just simply didn't do it. We will be here on Sunday with the entire WrestleMania. We got a lot now. You got to understand, I think it's 17 or 18 matches we're going to have to get through. So we're going to have to really put the pedal to the metal and try to get through all of these. So we will be here at 2 o'clock on Sunday with our WrestleMania pre-show. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.